Hey there, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com, and welcome to another edition of the Bike James Podcast. This Bike James Podcast is brought to you by Pedaling Innovations, makers of the world's best flat pedal, the Catalyst Pedal. You can find out more at Pedaling Innovations, but this is basically the pedal that our feet have been waiting for and allows you to apply good functional movement to the bike. So everything starts at your feet. If your feet aren't strong and stable, then the rest of you is going to struggle. And so check out the Catalyst pedal so you can learn more about the first pedal that's designed to work with your feet and really help optimize your movement on the bike. So with all of that said, let's get into it. So this podcast is on becoming a fat optimized mountain bike rider. Now, this idea of becoming a fat optimized rider is something that I really got introduced to through the work of guys like Mark Sisson with the Primal Endurance Blueprint and Abel James, who's got the Wild Diet. I had him on the podcast doing an interview with him a few months ago. But the idea of when most people think of becoming of burning fat, we think of trying to lose fat. And that's something that, you know, someone who's got a physique goal is going to worry about. And it's not necessarily something that, you know, an athlete or you know, an endurance athlete like a mountain biker needs to worry about. You know, it's kind of a vain, you know, superficial goal. But what I realize is that becoming a fat optimized athlete really has to do with making sure that you're using your best fuel source as efficiently as possible. And fat is your best fuel source to fuel your efforts. And so understanding why that is and how you can optimize your fat metabolism and why it's really important, like why this epidemic of shoving sugar in our face to fuel our efforts is really causing problems, both performance and health-wise for riders. Like I said, it's kind of the goal of this podcast. So to jump into it here, I got my notes in front of me as always. Kind of keep me from going too far off track, but I may go on a few tangents here and there, but I'm going to try and stick to these notes here. But so to start out, being able to burn fat for fuel, like I said, it's more about than just looking good. It is really the key to an endurance athlete's performance. And the human body is made to prefer using fats for fuel. However, we train it to prefer sugars for fuel. And this leads to the need for a constant influx of sugar during training. So again, you know, not getting too much into this whole paleo diet thing, but just, again, just the idea of looking back on how did our ancestors used to eat. And again, I'm sure most of you are probably familiar with this concept on some level of that in reality, our ancestors did not have access to carbs and sugar at the levels that we do today. And so our metabolisms did not develop to prefer them for fuel. This is one of the reasons that we store fat for fuel, because that was the preferred fuel source for our body to fuel its efforts. And so this idea of introducing a lot of sugar into our diet has trained our metabolism to rely on this sugar and has gotten us away from what our best, most efficient fuel source is, which is fats. So once you've optimized your body to burn fat, you'll no longer need to constantly consume sugar to perform at high intensities for long periods of time. And this will lead to better performance and better health over the long run. In fact, a lot of this kind of got kicked off several years ago when I did an interview with the Precision Nutrition team. And Precision Nutrition, you can find out more about them at precisionnutrition.com. But man, they're just like one of the gold standards for nutrition in the fitness industry. They work with Olympic teams and professional teams and really high level of success. And so when these guys talk, you know, smart people listen. And so I was doing an interview with them on mountain biking nutrition. And one of the things that they said that really stuck out to me and kind of surprised me a little bit was they said that any event under 4 hours long shouldn't require any fuel during the event if you're metabolically optimized. And I remember this just floored me, because at the time I'm wanting to know, like, well, what are the fueling strategies? What's the best fueling strategy for a mountain bike rider during a race? And this is when they're like, you don't need one. Like, your races are so short. Anything under 4 hours, you don't need to be consuming fuel. Your body has plenty of fuel to power a hard 4 hour effort without the need for external fuel sources. But again, it came down to, are you metabolically optimized for this or not? So this idea that you need sugar to perform well during an endurance event is really a new phenomenon. And it's mainly fueled by companies that sell sugar to endurance athletes. You know, these companies fund research studies that show the positive results of their products and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, if you follow the money, it's usually leading back to a company that is selling sugar to endurance athletes. You know, there's a whole industry now that's based on telling you how much sugar to consume and when to consume it. And honestly, it's leading to a generation of endurance athletes with metabolic issues and other problems that are brought on by an overconsumption of sugar. So even though you may not, you know, be getting fat from it, although there are a lot of endurance athletes that carry excessive body fat and they can't seem to drop it, and you wonder why. And it's like, well, man, you're eating so much sugar while you're riding. You're pretty much negating a lot of the positive benefits that you're getting, you know, from your ride, from all the sugar that you're consuming while you're doing it. And this overconsumption of sugar is hard on you know, insulin. So the pancreas is having to work overtime. It also leads to chronic inflammation. There's gut problems associated with overconsumption of sugar because the bad gut flora that you don't want growing in your gut, they love sugar and they want to eat sugar. And so you're feeding that bad gut flora when you're consuming this stuff. And so like I said, there's a lot of issues and problems that come on by this overconsumption of sugar. And you know, this idea that endurance athletes need it is really a new phenomenon. And like I said, follow the money and you can usually figure out where it's coming from. Just real quick side note here, I gotta, by the way, organic sugar is still sugar. This made me laugh. I've seen this recently with some companies touting how they use organic sugar sources, and it's like, man, it's still sugar. Like, as far as your body's concerned, it's going to react metabolically the same. So even if you're consuming organic sugar, you're still going to end up having a lot of these problems from an overconsumption of sugar. And again, it's just not necessary. So for you to really understand why all this is and how it works, what I want to do is give you a quick overview of how the body's metabolism works, the energy systems basically work. And again, this is a very simplistic 10,000 foot overview. We can get way more into this, so please don't come firing off at me about how I left out this detail and that detail. I'm just trying to give an overview here. So at its most basic level, your body uses ATP to power the muscles and heart, and your heart is a muscle. ATP is short for adenosine triphosphate, and it's basically three phosphate molecules connected together. And what happens is one of those phosphate molecules is broken off. And when that happens, it creates energy. And your body uses that energy to create muscle contractions and relaxations. You need energy to actually relax the muscle as well. In fact, a lot of times when you're getting a cramp, it has to do with a short-term problem with not enough ATP to allow the muscle to relax. And so ATP is, and that basic reaction of cleaving off the phosphate and creating energy, that's how your body powers movement. But the problem is that there's a very limited supply of ATP on hand at any one time, which means that your body needs to constantly resupply ATP in the muscles. If you don't have any ATP, you can't contract and relax a muscle, and this usually means that you're dead or cramping like crazy, neither of which is really what you want to do on your bike. But your body has three energy systems to help it resupply ATP. The first one is the ATP-CP pathway. So this is where creatine comes in. If you've ever, you know, heard of or taken creatine, creatine phosphate is really what you're what you end up with. Creatine monohydrate turns into creatine phosphate in the body. And what it, after you've cleaved off one phosphate molecule from the ATP, a triphosphate, you now have an ADP, a diphosphate, or two phosphates. And your body will then take the phosphate molecule from the creatine phosphate and connect it back on, and now you have another ATP, or triphosphate, which you can then break one of those off, create energy. And so that's the short term. This is why taking creatine can help increase short-term strength, because it gives your body more of those creatine phosphates to quickly resupply ATP. And so that's the first one, and that one doesn't require oxygen. The next one is the glycolytic pathway, and this is where the sugar comes in. This is, your body uses sugar to fuel this pathway here, and I'll get into more of that here in just a second. And then finally, you have the aerobic pathway, and like it says, it relies on aerobic or oxygen for fuel. Now, just to be clear, all three of these pathways are always in use. It's just a matter of where the majority of the energy is being produced from that makes us say, well, this is an ATP CP or a glycolytic or an aerobic powered movement or event or whatever you want to call it. But all of them are always going at the same time. So the glycolytic pathway, like I said, makes up the, well, actually, the ATP CP and the glycolytic pathways make up what's known as the anaerobic energy system, which means without oxygen. Like I mentioned, both of those pathways don't require any oxygen to fuel the efforts. So this provides the pathway uses, like I said, creatine phosphate and glycogen to refuel ATP, and this helps power short bursts of hard effort. But the problem is that the glycolytic pathway is not very efficient. It only creates when your body breaks down a glucose. So just real quick, glucose and glycogen can get a little confusing. Glycogen is the stored form of sugar in your body, and glucose is the free form, which is floating in your blood and stuff, and so what your body will use. And so they're related, but one's the stored form, one's the free form that your body's gonna use. And so it uses glucose for to refuel the ATP, and so like I said, this power short bursts of hard effort, but it's not very efficient. It only delivers two molecules of ATP for every molecule of glucose that you use. And so again, hope I didn't lose everybody there, but the point is that short hard efforts, you've got your anaerobic energy systems, but they're just not very efficient. Like they're gonna refuel the your body, but they're not very efficient at doing it. The aerobic energy system, on the other hand, is super efficient. And for every molecule of fat that it takes in, it uses fat for fuel, it's going to produce 38 molecules of ATP. And this energy system, like I mentioned, it can power not only easy efforts, but moderate to moderately hard efforts as well once you train it and get it stronger. It also helps repay the oxygen debt, which is the term that we give to what when you go into short, hard anaerobic efforts. And your body creates these metabolic byproducts, and your body has to clear those out. That's part of the oxygen debt. You have to catch up. When you produce energy without oxygen, it's going to take some oxygen, extra oxygen, to help repay that debt and make up that at some point down the road. So, since the name of the game is ATP replenishment, then the more your aerobic energy system is contributing, the more efficient that replenishment will be. Because remember, the glycolytic energy system, you're only getting two molecules of ATP for every molecule of glucose that you use. But with the aerobic energy system, you're getting 38 molecules of ATP for every molecule of fat that you use. So much more efficient. So the more that aerobic energy system is contributing, the more ATP that you are that you're producing to help fuel your efforts, with less effort and just less stress on the metabolism. So another thing to consider is the fuel sources for those two systems. Like I already mentioned, the anaerobic energy system uses glucose as its primary fuel source. But the problem with this is glucose is very limited. Your body only stores a very limited amount of sugar. And like I said, the stored form is glycogen. And it's also metabolically dirty. It leaves behind a lot of byproducts that need to be cleaned up, like I mentioned about the oxygen debt. And these byproducts both require energy to clean up, and it also their buildup helps contribute to fatigue. So it's not lactic acid. That simplistic model is decades old. One of the more modern theories of fatigue is that these metabolic byproducts building up, your brain starts to sense their buildup and starts to limit contraction and stuff. And so, but these metabolic byproducts, like I said, if you either need energy to clean them out, or if you're not cleaning them out, their buildup is going to eventually lead to fatigue. And so the aerobic energy system, though, on the other hand, is very clean. And so you're going to the byproducts for that are just a little carbon dioxide and water. And fat is your body has a lot of fat. Yeah, and even in lean individuals, you have a very plentiful store of fat, and so you don't have to worry about running out of your fuel source. Especially like I said, if we're talking about 4 hours or less in an event, and so again, just something to consider is how that it works in your body, how those two different fuel sources affect your body. So a really good analogy I picked up from Mark Sisson, who is a guy I mentioned earlier. He's the Primal Endurance Blueprint is a really good book that does a much better job of explaining all of this than this podcast does. So if you're really interested in getting all the stuff behind it, check out his book. But he has a great analogy that I'm going to borrow from him. But if you think about your body as a furnace, and this furnace needs to burn fuel to create energy. And when you use sugar for fuel, it's like throwing kerosene into that furnace. It's going to burn really hot for a short period of time, and the system is going to take on a lot of stress to deal with that extra heat. Think about like pipes rattling and stuff like that from, you know, getting too hot. But when you use fat for fuel, it's like using slow burning coals that create less intense heat, but it burns much longer and it puts much less stress on the pipes and other structures to handle it. And so what we want to do is really maximize how much of that slow burning efficient fuel that we're using and really limit how much we're relying on the kerosene being thrown in there to power our efforts. So, you know, like I said, if you think about it, if you have two energy systems and one of them is inefficient, it's limited, and it creates a lot of metabolic stress, and you have another one that's super efficient, virtually unlimited, and creates very little metabolic stress, which one do you want to emphasize as an endurance athlete? Right? Like, it seems like a no-brainer when you put it like that. Like, well, you want to pick, you know, door number two. Like, that's the better one. And, you know, that's the aerobic energy system, obviously. And so, but you know, it's not, we have to, our nutrition and how we eat and all these things play a huge role. And so shoving sugar in your face all the time while you're training and doing your endurance activities is not helping do that. You're like, you're relying more on that inefficient, limited, and metabolic stressful one instead of the other one. So, and another thing to touch on, and this is not to romanticize the past, but our ancestors did some pretty amazing things without constantly shoving sugar in their face along the way. I mean, Roman soldiers would march, you know, long distances and have to be ready to set up camp and or fight when they got there. You know, Vikings rode their ships under these same circumstances. You know, I read a lot of history, and reading the history of guys like Spartacus, Alexander the Great, and Hannibal, and that tells me our ancestors were doing things that most of us would consider impossible today. And a lot of what history tells us we are capable of would be considered a fairy tale if it wasn't for the sources. You know, science is great, but it is a double-edged sword. As much as it helps us expand and learn new things, it also limits us in some ways. And this reliance on sugar and limitations that it puts on what we're capable of. I mean, science literally told us that it was impossible to run a 4-minute mile until someone went and did it. I mean, humans are constantly proving science wrong when science says, well, that's impossible, and then a human goes and does it. And so, you know, like I said, it's a double-edged sword, and just understanding that science can also hold us back with the information that it's providing to us. And I think that this is one of those areas that it's holding us back, is in, you know, telling us that, you know, we're too weak and we don't have what it takes to fuel our efforts at a high intensity for, you know, relatively long period of time without an over-reliance on sugar. So, you know, with all that said, what do we do, right? Hopefully by now I've convinced you that relying on sugar for fuel is not the way to go, and you know, becoming a fat optimized mountain bike rider is a good idea. So it's actually easy. Well, simple, I guess, is really the term, because it's not necessarily easy. Simple doesn't necessarily mean easy, so we're gonna go with simple. You train your body to run on fat for fuel and use sugar as little as possible. Now, how do we do that? Now, we forget that our body gets used to what we train it to do, right? So if we're constantly shoving sugar in our mouth to fuel our efforts from an external source, then our body will get used to that external source of sugar and start to crave it. But if we don't give our body an external fuel source, then it will learn to run on our internal fuel sources, i.e. fat for fuel, right? Like, specific adaptation to imposed demands. It's one of the basic training principles. You know, if you put sugar in your face, your body's going to start to rely on sugar. If you don't, it will be forced to learn to find fuel somewhere else. And like I said, you have plenty of internal fuel sources. So training your body to look internally for fuel is the key, instead of having it constantly looking to external fuel sources. So nutritionally, like I said, this comes down to limiting your sugar intake and trying to wait as long as possible into the day to eat sugar and carbs. And so, limiting sugar intake is a no-brainer. I mean, this again, in today's society, I don't think too many people listening to this are shocked that I'm recommending that we just kind of eat less sugar in general. And that's just kind of a good dietary strategy. But trying to wait as long as possible into the day to eat them is something that not a lot of people necessarily, thought about, but it really can help. And the reason is because when we wake up in the mornings, our metabolism is switched over to fat burning mode since we haven't eaten in several hours. So since you haven't, had any external fuel come in, your body has had to switch over to internal fuel burning, which is mainly fat. And so as long as you avoid eating carbs, and sugars, you'll stay in that fat burning mode. So the later that you can go into the day before eating a significant amount of carbs, the longer you're going to stay in that fat burning mode. So focusing on proteins, fats, fibrous carbs like vegetables, eating those early in the day and as late into the day as possible will help keep your metabolism, primed for that fat burning mode. And when you train, you want to try to work out when you're in that fat burning mode. So that means either first thing in the morning when you're fasted, or like I said, trying to not consume a lot of carbs or sugar before you get a chance to train and work out. And when you're working out, you want to really limit or actually avoid consuming sugar when you're training. And this does include training rides. So again, if it's just if you're If you we compete, how you compete is an extension of how you train. And so if you are constantly shoving sugar in your face on training rides, guess what you're going to need to do when you compete. But if you're not, well, then your body's going to get trained to not need it, and you're not going to need it when you race. So yes, you don't need to be consuming, especially don't need to be consuming this stuff on training rides. I mean, no one's getting paid based on their training ride performance. And so, using sugar on training rides is just not really something that you want to do. You also want to focus some time on low intensity training to increase your fat burning furnaces in the cells. These are known as mitochondria. But this goes back to the running podcast that I did not too long ago, and talking about how running is a great cross training exercise for mountain bikers. And one of the reasons is it allows us to actually have a low intensity component in our training plan. And that just the action nature of most trails and most areas really makes it hard for you to stay in a true low intensity mode. And which does start to limit your ability to build that aerobic machinery, which can limit your ability to become a fat optimized mountain bike rider. And so using running and focusing some time on the low intensity training to build out those fat burning furnaces will really help as well. So by maximizing the time that you spend in fat burning mode and forcing your body to learn how to use its own internal fuel sources more efficiently, you can perform well without sacrificing your health in the process. And this is really what it boils down to. Again, if you're listening to this and you don't get paid based on how well you perform, you should really strongly consider sacrificing your health either now or in the future for the possibility of performing just maybe a little bit better, right? And like, I'm not saying that you want to suck, but sacrificing your health today so that you can have a local KOM on Strava for a few months is not a really good trade-off. And so keeping these bigger ideas in mind. So again, if you can perform just as well and you can improve and preserve your health as you continue to age and progress in the sport, then to me that seems like a win-win situation, which again is why I'm a big advocate for people trying to become a fat optimized athlete. So now, with all of this said, I want you to be careful about going down the low carb rabbit hole, because there is definitely a rabbit hole that you can get sucked down with this. After hearing all of this, a lot of people wonder, well, why don't you just go low carb all the time and really focus on this fat burning mode stuff, and even going so far as a ketogenic diet, which again, if you're not familiar with that, is where you consume zero carbs and your body starts to burn ketones for fuel. It's a very specific metabolic state, like I said, that is brought on by consuming very few to little carbs on a consistent basis. And so, but while this may work for some, The truth is that mountain biking, it's not a pure endurance sport. And a lot of these people who are huge advocates for this low carb and even keto, super low carb and ketogenic diets for endurance athletes are more for like pure endurance athletes, people who are going for long periods of time at a relatively low intensity level. And so think like triathletes or marathon runners. But mountain bikers, even road cyclists, but mountain biking by its nature is more anaerobic than those sports. It requires more tension, more strength. It's a more anaerobic, more of a strength endurance sport. And so this means that as a mountain biker, you still require a strong anaerobic metabolism, and carbs can help you recover from and fuel your hard efforts. You just need to limit them as much as you can. So the way that I like to explain it is like this. Don't try to find out how much sugar and carbs you can get away with before it really starts to affect your health or your waistline. You want to find out how few you can eat and still perform well and feel good. And for some, this may be none. Some people do thrive and do really well on the super low carb. For some people, it may be more carbs than what some would consider a quote unquote low carb diet, and that's fine. But the intention is to try to limit the carbs, limit the sugars, because we understand that there are metabolic side effects to over-reliance on them for fuel. And when we do that, it'll definitely help us perform and feel better. So to wrap things up here, and again, I appreciate those of you that have stuck this out with me. Like I said, I think this is a really important subject, and that not enough riders really understand the energy systems and how this works, and how the human body works, and how we can train it to optimize certain things, and that we don't have to rely on sugar constantly being shoved in our face to fuel our efforts when we're on our bikes, and that there are side effects to that. So, just keep in mind that you can and should be able to go for a 2 to 4 hour ride without needing to consume a bunch of sugar along the way. And if you can't, that's a sign of being metabolically inefficient, and you should address that. Over-reliance on sugar has these metabolic side effects that I mentioned earlier, like chronic inflammation, increased chance of type 2 diabetes, increased chance of excess body fat and trouble losing body fat. There's just a lot of things that are no good from consuming too much sugar. So like I said, it goes beyond just that. Your performance and your health can suffer. And so with smart training and nutrition strategies, you can become a fat-optimized mountain bike rider and enjoy better performance and health as a result of that. So, anyways, I hope that you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have given you guys some fuel for thought, so to speak. A little tongue in cheek there, or a little joke there. But anyways, like I said, it's an important thing to me. I talk to a lot of riders who are frustrated because they're not able to perform like they think that they should, or they're having problems. That really a lot of it just comes down to this over-reliance on sugar and consuming too much sugar. And like I said, unfortunately, there's a whole industry that's profiting off of this this problem. And so anything I can do to kind of help educate riders to make better decisions with their training and nutrition, then I'm happy to do it. So anyways, like I said, hope you've enjoyed this, gotten some good stuff to think about. And once again, be sure to visit me at bikejames.com, where you can get a bunch of bunch more podcasts like this. I've got free workouts for you to check out. It's just a really great resource for you if you're serious about learning how to apply good training and nutrition principles to your mountain bike training. So anyways, once again, it's been James Wilson. You can check me out at bikejames.com, and I will talk to you guys next time.